Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. It is Monday evening, June 29th, as I sit to record this here, and I got to apologize. I was a slacker last week. I should have gotten you guys a couple of podcasts out, and I did not. Actually, I'm supposed to be doing a guest podcast if I follow sequentially the order that I've been doing. But I've been trying to juggle schedules with one guy and hasn't been working out. Incidentally, if you got somebody you'd like to hear from as a guest, maybe post up on Instagram. Or actually, I mean, technically, I guess the way I've been asking you guys to do it is get on and rate and review and then add on a guest suggestion there. Or you just, in the case of this one here, just throw something up on Instagram, maybe on the post I put up in the morning when this one goes live on Instagram or Facebook there, and I'll try to pull in some new blood here. Been a little crazy on this end here. What is today? It's Monday, so not this past weekend, but the weekend before that, I was doing some volunteer work. Right across the street from us is the senior center, and my wife, kind-hearted woman she is, volunteered me to go drive a bunch of T-posts in there. Well, that's pretty easy work in normal soil conditions, but we live in an area that is pretty much decomposed granite for soil. And I don't know if you ever tried to drive a T-post through rock, but it's about like that. And I did do a couple dozen of them. Many times, you know, resetting, moving it over to a new position because I'd end up in a rock and not able to drive it through it. And by the end of the day, man, my forearms were so stinking tight. I couldn't believe it. It felt like they were had been inflated with an air compressor. And the next day, Monday, I tried to shoot my bow in the shop, get some practice shots in, and I couldn't even shoot, you know, one arrow. My felt like that thing was going to slip out of my hand with the bow and hit me in the forehead. And then Tuesday evening, I was trying to do some typing on my laptop, and that's sitting on my lap, and I don't know if it's just a weird angle of it sitting there or what, but it was, I could really feel the tightening in my forearms. And by the time, you know, I just had to hammer out an email, and by the time I was done with that email, my left arm, forearm had like totally like locked up. Felt like I had shin splints in my forearm. And man, the whole rest of the evening, that whole night, I didn't sleep. I mean, it was like crazy pain. The highest level of pain I've had over a sustained period of hours that I can ever remember in my life. And didn't hardly sleep that night. Next morning, I went to urgent care, and turns out I had inflamed some tendons, I guess, going through my wrist to my thumb. And the lady had me, you know, bending, doing different things to test to see what was going on. And she pushed my thumb down, and I about shot through the ceiling. Holy cow, man, it hurt. But the good news was once they put me in a splint and immobilized my thumb, probably only an hour before the pain went away. And then within a couple of days, I had yanked the splint off because it's really hard to build bows with a splint on. The lady told me it was going to be the nurse. It'd be probably 2 weeks with that splint on. But I've been running without it, despite my wife browbeating me for doing so. And it seems to be doing okay. I still can't shoot my bow yet, but I'm able to function everywhere else at work. So at least it's not slowing down bow production. And so at least, you know, looking back health wise, looking back up again. So very relieved there. I was kind of sweating it, you know, with archery season coming up, and didn't want to lose any time from a practice standpoint for sure. But it got me worried that, geez, what if this is going to require surgery or something like that? And then I got a couple of good tags lined up, you know, a couple of good hunts. And man, I was just like looking at possible worst case scenarios, and it was not pretty. But we'll continue to cross our fingers for a quick recovery here, and get back shooting my bow again here pretty quick, because it's killing me not being able to. And speaking of hunt prep, man, I've been like procrastinating. It's been killing me since I moved out here to Colorado. I left a fitness class that I had, which was really good for my I guess my personality and my quirks or idiosyncrasies or whatever you want to say. I do well like in a kind of a group setting where it's kind of competitive, and it's, you know, friendly competitive. It's not, you know, no hard feelings kind of deal, but you know, we kind of each push each other. And I had that when I, where I lived before, and I have not been able to replicate that out here. And it's been really difficult for me to be disciplined and to stay motivated and get pushed from a fitness standpoint. And man, I tell you, I have been like sucking wind climbing stairs. I'm about as bad a shape as I can ever remember being in. And so on Sunday, I finally got my butt in gear and went out for a run, about a 3 mile run on Sunday. And then I, for maintain consistency, I went out again this morning, and this time I ran up in the park. And man, with this sucks with COVID, you can't, you know, to go in the Rocky Mountain National Park. And this is, if any of you guys are coming out to visit this summer, you have to call ahead and make a reservation. And even on the trails here, like there's separate trailheads that you can take off and go up into the park, you know, parking lots and stuff. And I drove up Sunday morning because I wanted to do some trail running rather than running on the sidewalks, which just bores me to death. I drove up Sunday morning, got up to the trail or the parking lot about 7:45, and they have a sign that you have to, you know, scan in the QR code and make a reservation so that the rolling starts, you know, to stagger everybody out on the trails. And so if you get to the to the parking lot before 6 a.m., then you don't have to deal with that. So this morning I got up, I usually get up at 5 and you know, get ready for work and head out to the shop by about 5:30. But I decided this morning I'd just go directly to the parking lot as soon as I got up. So I got up to the parking lot, I don't remember what time it was, maybe 20 after 5 or so, and then went on a trail run. And so I wasn't sure, kind of did a loop, and I didn't know what the distance was going to be. So it only ended up being 1.65 miles, but there was some good elevation gain in there. So tomorrow I'm going to do it again, but I'm going to, there's another spur trail. I'll run out that trail, you know, about 3/4 of a mile, then turn around and come back and just backtrack and then do that same loop so I can still get that same elevation gain. And I think that up there where that trail is, I'll probably be hitting about 8,000 feet, roughly. So that's, man, you'll definitely be feeling it when I'm running. Hell, I'm feeling it when I'm walking up the hills. It's pretty bad. But my wife was talking to one of my stepsons today, and he's like, man, you got to get south on Under Armour's Map My Run. And there's like a whole community of people apparently on there, and a bunch of his buddies are on there. And he's like, you could get us on there. And, you know, and I was telling my wife, hey, I'd have to get some kind of like mulligan there, or not a mulligan, but what's the word I'm looking for? It's not coming to me. Any case, handicap. There you go. I'd have to get a handicap for my age and the elevation, because those guys are running down there at sea level in northwestern California. So, you know, I've got 25 years of age on them, or almost 25. And then, you know, that between that and sea level. But any case, it got me thinking that I should hit up the podcast listeners. If any of you guys are in the similar space that I'm at right now with needing to get into shape, or maybe you've already started, being wiser than myself, on getting in shape for the fall season here, and are doing some running or whatever, if you get onto your phone, onto your app store, and download Under Armour's Map My Run, and then you can go to friends and then seek out people. I don't know how you search it. If you're able to just search my name, South Cox, or my screen name. Apparently I signed up for something from Under Armour years ago, and I didn't even remember that I had, but it's South 1969, which is the year that I was born. Then reach out to me and get on there. And don't worry, I'm not going to be making anybody look bad here, at least not for quite a while anyway. But it'll be a good chance. You can get on there and heckle me, or, you know, keep me motivated. I'll be able to see what you guys are doing. You can see what I'm doing. We can hold each other accountable, and maybe I'll call out, you know, people on the podcast that are doing better than me, and maybe call out some of the people that aren't doing better than me as well. So it might be kind of fun thing to add in here and you know, make each other step it up here for hunting season. Because if I'm able to get a tag for Nevada, it's less than 6 weeks away. So I need to be stepping it up for sure. But man, this has been a long prelude here. So without much any more ado, I will get on to it. We are back with Mike Mitten, One with the Wilderness. We're on chapter 7 now. Looking at the book here, just kind of gauging, we're maybe 20% of the way through, roughly. So we still have some good, you know, good pile of content still coming up ahead of us here. This one's chapter 7, Recurve and Coyotes. The mid-January sun gave little comfort to the sub-freezing temperature I endured in the tree stand. As it set, it closed the door on another deer season. Ordinarily, I would feel a bit of loss at season's end without tagging a handsome white-tailed buck, but I have come to anticipate the new freedom gained with the opportunity to pursue the elusive coyote. Calling coyotes in with the predator call that simulates the distressful cry of an unfortunate rabbit seems to be the most successful way to get within bow range. They sometimes come in quickly, driven by hunger and cunning born upon thievery. Their usual nervous cautiousness is intensified as they look for the struggling prey, making any movement made in an attempt to draw an arrow very difficult. As a coyote moves closer to you, don't be deceived by the fluffy or ragged coat, because the target of vital organs under this hair is quite small. The fur is nearly as effective absorbing blood as it is holding in body heat. Shot placement is critical on an animal that can run off, leaving little sign to follow. These factors add to the challenge of bow hunting coyotes. Coyote hunting can be enjoyed all year with a few restricted hours in the state of Illinois. While deer hunting, I don't want any disturbance to spook deer, but I have blown into a predator call while in a tree stand. I usually wait until just before it's time to climb down in the evening before calling. I figure the deer hunt for the day is over, so why not try it? Being elevated with fading light and wanting only a close shot at a small target, it is a good time to bring in a coyote as he readies himself for a night of hunting. Many predator hunters go out at night. Use of lights with red or amber lenses will allow a hunter to see an approaching fox or coyote without diverting their attention to you. A hunter's movement is obviously minimized when he uses a shotgun or rifle compared to the bow and arrow. A gun hunter adds challenge to his quest by making shots at great distances, with accuracy being his biggest hurdle. The coyote's sense of sight, hearing, and smell are almost all neutralized from 300 yards. In contrast, the feeling of accomplishment and pride in taking the game is heightened when everything goes right and the recovery of a bow shot coyote is made. My first coyote was taken in late December while hunting from a tree stand. I was hunting deer at the time and had been in the same tree since dawn. It was now 3 p.m. I hadn't seen any buck movement and would not be able to hunt again for another 6 days. A pair of coyotes moving through an opening in the thicket was welcome excitement. They were hunting together in a characteristic tandem trotting pattern through swamp grass at the edge of a thicket. The synchronized gait of the pair was evident as their constant pace went unbroken regardless of the obstacles presented to each. One seemed much bigger than the other, and I guessed him to be the male. They took an occasional glance at each other as their ears moved forward and back, aiding in the collection of data to surrounding occurrences. This tireless efficiency seemed like it could be maintained over miles. It was apparent this tactic would allow them the ability to scare up a rabbit or squirrel whose flight path from may put it at jaw's reach of the other. As I studied that pair, I unconsciously drew my predator call from its resting place in the front pocket of my hunting pants. Pressing the plastic device against wind-chapped lips, I blew into it with cupped hands over the barrel of the opening. The alarming shrill sound broke the silence in a startling way. Part of me wanted to shut it down like an early morning alarm clock, but I finished a sequence of tones that should have stimulated salivation in the pair of predators. With bow in hand, I watched the coyote stop on cue and begin a stalk in my direction. The big male continued to sneak in a crouched cat-like position from the grassy area into the thicket. The smaller one broke formation and began to circle downwind. The big male set each foot to the ground, making no sound as he approached. He stopped upon reaching a deer trail that ran 15 yards from my stand. My attention was focused in two directions as I realized that the smaller coyote would soon detect my scent, while the larger, closer one locked up 50 yards away. He appeared to be waiting for more signs of the apparent conflict. I rectified this dilemma by squeaking softly like a mouse with my unaided vocal cords, trying not to give away my ambush position. When the coyote heard the sound of the pseudo-mouse, he instantly commenced to stalk down the deer trail towards me. His pace was quicker than his counterpart, and I was sure he would reach me before my scent would frighten the other one. Passing my stand broadside, I knew a moving target at 15 yards would be my only opportunity. The 75 pounds of resistance at full draw of my Brackenberry recurve stung my cold fingertips as it was unleashed against the 22-19 game-getter arrow. I witnessed the arrow strike just behind the shoulder of the coyote in full stride. There was no audible sound of impact due to the thick fur and the cut-on-contact point of the Zwicky broadhead. The coyote ran off in earnest, unaware of the lethal trauma he had just sustained. I sat back down on the seat of my stand, contemplating what had just happened. I didn't recall noticing what the other coyote did after the shot, only that I had made a good hit on the big one and was hopeful of finding him dead. Reality sank in as I found myself waiting in the tree for a buck to come by, although nothing happened. I still had nearly 2 hours to hunt, and I hoped I didn't hurt my chance of killing a buck by shooting the coyote. I convinced myself I did not, as my heart rate returned to normal, or as normal as it could get, while holding back the urge to get down and track the coyote. At 4:35, I got down and slowly traced over the path the coyote took. There was little blood to follow, even though the arrow had severed both lungs. The frozen, bare ground allowed no footprints to impregnate its surface, and the blood was my only means to track. After covering over 100 yards of trail, I came to a deadfall in the thicket. I looked up and noted tiny specks on some of the limbs 4 feet off the ground. Moving around this downed timber, I noticed a gray object that looked out of place. My brush wolf was recovered. The light-colored male was well-furred under coarse guard hairs. I pulled a few burrs loose from his hind leg, noting the effective means some plants have for spreading their seeds. His teeth were long and sharp, and I wondered if they were ever used to bring down a deer, not wanting to admit that they were more than likely used to catch small rodents and birds. After more blown opportunities, missed shots, and bad decisions with other coyote encounters, I had finally taken one with my bow. Coyotes are found over most of the United States, and after many decades of attempts to eradicate them to make room for domestic livestock and poultry, they have adapted to live close to human civilization. Hunting of predators should continue, but only when individual populations warrant it, based on sound wildlife management. Some people become offended by wearing wild-caught or shot furs, but they don't realize that predators like raccoons, fox, coyote, mink, and bobcats can be very implemental in the reduction of other species, many of which are threatened or endangered. Many wetlands are reduced with man's encroachment. Attempts are made to preserve the wild by setting aside areas that might encourage natural harmony between species, but unfortunately, large populations of predators, such as raccoons, for example, can have devastating effects on amphibians or ground nesting birds' chances for survival. These animals are the real losers because their specialized needs can't be met with man's destruction of lands or his endeavors for preservation. Garments made from wild fur should be worn proudly, especially if you are the one who caught or hunted the pelt. Coats of leather or fur are warm and will last a lifetime. They don't wear out or go out of style like many made from synthetic materials. Should they ever be discarded, they are biodegradable and considered safe for the environment. Getting back to coyote hunting, the use of trail hounds to push coyotes past waiting hunters is a common practice in areas of large land tracts. This style of hunting can be very enjoyable and usually involves the use of vehicles or horses to keep up with the hounds. On the surface, it appears that the dogs do all the work, but the houndsman will tell you of the countless hours of training and breaking it takes to raise a good coyote hound. The pace of the coyote hunt is much faster than a coon hunt, and the urgency to keep up with the pack is part of the excitement. It is true that coyotes do most of their movement at night, but I have seen many of them at midday. One year I took a break along during a deer hunt and was snacking on a candy bar at noon when I saw a coyote standing still, statuesque, not 25 yards away. I didn't hear it approach. The coyote did nothing for several minutes, granting me time to gradually reach for my bow. I found its familiar form as my fist clenched around its handle. I tried to take a shot, but the coyote's sixth sense kicked in and it turned and walked towards the shadows of the briars. I let up on the draw as I tried to squeak. My mouth full of melted chocolate permitted only one note. It was enough. The animal came back to its original position and then walked towards me. As it stepped behind a wild rose bush, I reached full draw. Her steps forward were met with the unobstructed flight of my arrow. The adult female was soon retrieved from her final resting place 75 yards into the briar thicket. I have often seen deer running from coyotes. Areas of high deer population usually have good coyote numbers. They may not kill many adult deer, but carcasses of dead deer found in late winter help the coyote supplement its diet and allow them to get through the most stressful time of year. Their relationship with deer was made clear to me one morning when trying to rattle in a buck. I was surprised to see a large coyote come charging at me with his ears laid back and eyes of fierce intensity. It wasn't until it caught the smell of my downwind scent that its charge was alerted to flight. The coyote was very much aware of what he was hearing and appeared to be convinced that the outcome of the battle for dominance between two bucks would be of interest. Since predators react to any opportunity to catch prey, I have since rattled in many coyotes. Some were collected with a well-placed arrow, while the reaction of others I captured on film. If you love bow hunting and the challenge of the sport makes you draw from your hunting and woodsmanship skills, then your pursuit of coyotes will only intensify this love. Bow hunting for many is a way of life as well as a management tool that can be applied to numerous species, not just ungulates. All right, so goes chapter 7. What is chapter 8 going to be for next week? Texas smorgasbord. All right, so back to the fitness app. I will be hitting it tomorrow morning, so by the time that many of you listen, my first recorded run should be up. So I encourage you guys to get on there and give me a poke in the rear and keep me encouraged to keep after it. And we'll see who can be most consistent with their workouts here. I am planning on doing it 7 days a week, and I'd like to get in 3 miles a day. That is my plan at this point. So get on there and keep me honest. And I definitely need to do this in order to keep putting good video content in front of you guys. So if nothing else, then do it for that. If you do enjoy the videos on YouTube that we've been putting up here the last couple of years, because if I can't climb that mountain, man, I can't get my deer and I can't get it on video. So I appreciate in advance you guys that will be hopefully pushing me. Thanks.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I come down for-